Countdown for blast off. X minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X minus 1.
Tonight's presentation of Suspense.
Buck Benny, the two-fisted, quick-triggered marksman who shoots from the hip and never misses.
Well, hello again. This is Buck Benny speaking. Welcome to another episode of Suspense and X Minus One. Tonight on Suspense, we have actor Phil Silvers, who's best known for being Sergeant Bilko on The Phil Silvers Show that started in 1955. He became a household name, just a huge hit. But it was one of those hits that hits hard and then kind of goes away. It didn't last all that long, I think 3 years maybe. And he would then after that go on to guest star on lots of television shows and lots of being lots of films. Just a huge amount of success for Phil Silvers. And he, in 1972, unfortunately had a stroke. But he kept on appearing in things up till about 1980, but his speech was a little slurred after that. But before that, he did just some absolutely incredible work. This performance tonight is from 1947, so it's before he really becomes any kind of household name, but you can still hear he did a really nice job on this episode of Suspense. Then our episode of X-1 we have for you tonight is another one of our comedy sort of episodes, which ties in well with Phil Silvers on Suspense, I suppose, and just about baseball in general and a Martian and how do you mix those two things together, but you'll find out. So I hope you're going to enjoy both shows tonight. I hope you're going to have fun with our Suspense Saturday. I'm having fun bringing these to you, and we'll see you next time. Enjoy.
Yes, Roma wines taste better because only Roma selects from the world's greatest wine reserves for your pleasure. And now, Roma Wines, R-O-M-A, Roma Wines present Suspense.
Tonight, Roma Wines bring you Mr. Phil Silvers in The Swift Rise of Eddie Albright, a suspense play produced, edited, and directed for Roma Wines by William Spear.
Suspense, radio's outstanding theater of thrills, is presented for your enjoyment by Roma Wines. That's R-O-M-A, Roma Wines. Those better-tasting California wines enjoyed by more Americans than any other wine. For friendly entertaining, for delightful dining. Yes, right now a glassful would be very pleasant, as Roma Wines bring you Phil Silvers in a remarkable tale of Suspense.
Up car, please. Good morning, Mr. Griffin.
Good morning.
Get back in the car, please. Well, good morning, Miss Wainwright.
Hello, Eddie.
Good morning, Miss Kittredge. Take away, Eddie.
That's all, please. Watch the doors, please.
Very well.
Two, please. Three. Four, please.
Well, that's the way it is with me all day long, see? I got my ups and downs, like they say. But I like it that way, see? Because I'm not going to be doing this forever. I'm not even going to be doing it very much longer at all. Because I got a job as an assistant to Mr. Garvey, the building manager. And the way I handle my car and my customers, I'm going to be a cinch to get it. In fact, I am so much a cinch that I have told Millie that that's what I am already. Millie is the manicurist at the elite barbershop down in Lexington. And 3-4 times a week on my off hour, I jump out of my uniform and into my street clothes and go down there and get a manicure. I sort of got Millie staked out, see? And that's where I am on this day when all this happened. Down there getting a manicure from Millie.
I'll say that you got real nice hands, though, Mr. Albright. Real swan gay.
Well, you see, for a man of my position...
But I will also say that you don't really have to have them cared for quite so often.
Oh, that...
I mean, I wouldn't tell that to everyone, but some of my customers, I like to give my very best professional advice, you know?
Well, maybe I... Ow!
Just let your hand relax, Mr. Albright.
Yeah. Well, Maybe I know that. Maybe I got my reasons.
Mr. Albright, I can't imagine what kind of reasons you'd
look,
have.
With a guy like me, nobody has to stand on many ceremonies, see? For instance, all my friends call me Eddie.
Really?
Sure, Mr. Garvey and everybody. Just like I call you Millie. That's all right, isn't it?
Oh, well, sure, but me calling a customer, but, well, it makes a difference, you know?
Is that all I am? Just another customer? Ooh.
You must hold your hand still, Mr. Albright.
Yeah, sure. But what I mean, just because I hold a slightly higher position than somebody else, that don't make any difference to me. That's my idea of democracy. Everybody is just as good as anybody else. Of course, unless you're a millionaire or something.
Oh, well, what's so special about a millionaire? I got a customer that's a millionaire, and his hands aren't nearly as swan gay as yours.
Well, what I mean is, I'm not quite in that class yet. But I wish you would call me Eddie.
Well, you know, I was thinking about you.
Honest?
Once or twice. I mean, you're quite young to be holding the position of assistant manager of a big building like the Dunbar Building.
Well, I started at the bottom, of course, but there's little tricks in getting to the top, just like in everything else.
Gee, I wished I knew some.
Well, take me, for instance. You know how I got where I am? Remembering names and faces, that's all.
Yeah?
Yes, sir. When I was just merely an elevator operator.
Remembering names? You mean a little thing like that can get you to
a little thing like that? Listen, how do you suppose Jim Farley got where he is today?
Where is he?
I don't know where he is right now, but that's how he got to be Postmaster General. Just remembering names and faces. Just one little thing, that's all.
Well, I don't know. He must have had some kind of other abilities. I mean, he must have been a bug on stamps or something. Oh, Kevin said that. Look at that cuticle.
Well, maybe one, two little things, but that was the main thing. Now take me, for instance.
Oh. Oh, I'm sorry, Eddie, but you got to keep your hands still, you know.
Oh, that's okay, Millie. Forget it. But I was just trying to show you something in the paper. See this picture?
Yeah. Frankie the Nose Maddox. Former New York gangster escaped from Atlanta 6 months ago, believed to be in city. Oh, sure, I saw that this morning.
Yeah, so did I. And when I saw it, I said to myself, Eddie, you, Eddie Albright, you've seen this guy somewhere before. And just like that, I remembered.
Oh, well, I bet I could remember an ugly mug like that.
Yeah, but suppose you only seen him 3-4 times, and it was 2-3 years ago, and he was always with a whole lot of other people.
Eddie, you mean you know Frankie Maddox?
No, but I took him up in my car. That was when I was just merely an elevator operator. I took him up 3-4 times. There's a rich guy named Ellinger, lives in a penthouse on top of our building, and I took him up there. And that was 2-3 years ago. But right away I remembered, recalled the face.
Oh, I guess that is pretty good, all right.
Sure, that's the kind of thing that got me where I am.
Yeah, well, some people are lucky, I guess.
Well, I don't know. But some people that are lucky like to share their luck with other people. Never stop to think about that.
Well, I'm quite sure I don't know what you mean.
Well, take you and me, for example.
What?
Maybe we could be lucky together. I mean, maybe you and me could go out to dinner and the theater some night.
Really? Oh, gee, that'd be awful nice.
Well, how about tonight?
Tonight? Well, I don't know. I guess I could make it tonight.
Okay, now where do I meet?
Well. So this is where you spend all your time.
Oh, hello, Alex. Millie, I just remembered something important. I gotta go.
Yeah, but Eddie, I haven't finished.
What's your hurry? You might at least introduce the little lady to your boss.
No,
oh,
don't say
dear.
That.
Then you must be Mr. Garvey.
Millie,
well, I'm sure
not...
I'm pleased to meet you.
Mr. Garvey? Say, what's this guy been telling you?
Millie, I
don't see what's so funny.
No,
all
it's
I know
not.
Is that Mr. Albright here is Mr. Garvey's personal assistant in the Dunbar building.
Is that what he told
Look,
you?
Look, Alex, can I just...
Oh, Eddie, I'm ashamed. How could you do such a thing to such a cute little lady?
Eddie Albright, you going to sit there and let this man talk to me?
He better sit there because I am his boss.
Millie, look.
I'm cheap starter on the Dunbar elevators, and little Eddie here is operator number 23.
Eddie.
And when I say go, he goes. And when I say stay, he stays.
Millie, no. Look, Millie, I gotta go, but
I haven't finished your hand, Mr. Albright.
Oh, Millie, let's not be bitter. Well, goodbye. Well, you can imagine how that made me feel. I felt lower than the third baseman. And what made it worse, it was all true, what I told Millie. All except the little part about being Mr. Garvey's assistant. But I did remember faces. I was going to get to the top. I was there already, practically. But all I could think of was how I could get even with that starter, that Alex Henderson, without having him fire me. And pretty soon he came back, and I just didn't speak to him. I didn't even look at him. But I could see him grinning all over that ugly puss of his every time he looks at me. And then I see him looking serious and going over to talk to some guys that just came in that I recognize as plainclothes dicks. and then they separate and sort of hang around the lobby trying to look as though they aren't there. And I figure I'll bide my time to get to that Alex. So pretty soon I mosey over to where he is.
Well, 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 if it isn't Mr. Albright.
Okay, okay, you had your fun. What are all the dicks doing in the lobby?
Well, now, I wouldn't tell everyone, but of course an important man like you...
Oh, lay off, can't you? What's going on?
They had a tip Frankie Maddox was heading for this building.
Frankie Maddox?
Yeah. Friend of yours?
Well, I know what he looks like. I took him up to the penthouse 3-4 times. 2-3 years ago. I never forget.
Yeah? Who was with him? General MacArthur?
Now, look, I'm not kidding. I'd remember him any place.
Well, why don't you just go over and speak to the lieutenant over there?
Okay, I will.
Get back on your car.
But, Alex...
Get back on your... Well, 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 look who's coming in the door. Our girlfriend.
Our girlfriend? Oh, listen, Alex, I can take just...
How do you do, Miss O'Malley?
Oh, well, I'm quite well, thank you, Mr. Henderson.
Hello, Millie.
I wonder if you could have one of your boys take me up to the penthouse. We got a call at the shop a little while ago from Mr. Ellinger. He wanted a manicurist sent up.
Why, sure, Miss O'Malley, the last car there.
Thank you very kindly, Mr. Henderson.
Eddie, take the young lady up to the penthouse. Right away. Look sharp.
Millie.
The penthouse, please.
Now, listen, Millie, I can explain all what I
and
said.
And I do not wish to engage in any unnecessary conversation with the help, Mr. Albright.
Oh, Millie, that guy's jealous, that's all. He knows when that job comes up, I'm a cinch for it, and he won't stand a chance. Huh? He's just trying to get the knife on me, that's all. And that job is coming up, and I'm going to get it. Any day now, you'll see. Oh, Millie, give me a break. You said yourself it didn't matter even if a guy was a millionaire.
I am a very democratic person, Mr. Albright. I have no objection at all to a man being an elevator operator whatsoever. But I do object to his being a big phony.
Mm-hmm.
I believe this is my floor. Good day, Mr. Albright.
Millie.
Hold it, bud.
Huh? You heard him, hold it. I'm sorry, but you gentlemen can't bring that copper down on this car. You'll have to take the freight elevator.
Shut up.
Now, listen,
get in there. All right, easy now. Okay, stand up, stand it up in that corner.
Well, of course, if you gentlemen insist.
Okay, that'll do it.
Our policy is to give prompt and courteous service to all the occupants of this building.
Okay,
however,
but
the regulation...
Start down.
But it's against regulations.
Start down.
Yes, sir. But it's against regulations to carry furniture in the passenger cars. And a big carpet like that.
What about a big carpet like that?
Well... It's furniture.
Well, what do you know? Sonny boy here thinks this is furniture.
Well, it ain't furniture, you see, Sonny boy.
Well, the regulations
are
specific. Yes, sir. What floor, sir?
The basement.
Yes, sir. Which basement?
You ain't trying to be funny, are you, Sonny boy?
No, sir, but we have 3 basements in this building.
You all got
like
stairs
to point...
up to the street?
Yeah, they have stairs, but
you
it isn't.
Take us to the first when you come to.
Yes, sir. But the building regulations...
Oh, shut up.
Yes, sir. Well, like I say, we believe in giving prompt and courteous service. So I wasn't going to argue with anybody, particularly anybody as big and tough as these two guys look. They wanted to take a carpet to the basement. Well, there was no skin off my knees. It was a big carpet, all right. It was rolled up, and they had it standing in the corner between them. And I glanced at it, just casual-like. And then I saw something that made my skin come up in goosebumps all over. Sticking out of the bottom of that carpet was a pair of feet. Hey! Those guys had a dead body in that carpet.
For Suspense, Roma Wines are bringing you Phil Silvers in The Swift Rise of Eddie Albright. Roma Wines' presentation tonight in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense. Between the acts of Suspense, this is Truman Bradley for Roma Wines. Make your Easter Sunday a day of gracious hospitality with America's favorite wine. That's Roma wine, R-O-M-A, Roma, enjoyed by more Americans than any other wine. Your guests will enjoy glorious golden amber Roma California sherry. And to bring out the full goodness of that ham or turkey dinner, serve Roma California Burgundy or Sauterne. Whichever Roma wine you serve, you enjoy an important difference, a superiority in fuller bouquet, richer body, and better taste. That's because Roma selects California's choicest grapes. Then, Roma master vintners with America's finest winemaking resources guide this grape treasure unhurriedly
too tempting taste perfection. Later, with Roma wines of years before, these choice treasures await selection from the world's greatest wine reserves for your pleasure. So tomorrow, for your best buy in good taste, insist on Roma wine. R-O-M-A, Roma, the greatest name in wine.
And now, Roma Wines bring back to our Hollywood soundstage Phil Silvers in The Swift Rise of Eddie Albright, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Well, when I saw those two tough guys had a body rolled up in that carpet, I just stood there at the controls of my car and tried to keep my knees from knocking until we got down to the first basement.
Is this the basement?
Huh?
I say, is this the basement?
Oh, yes, sir.
Okay. All right. Let's lift it easy. All right.
Can I help you?
No, never mind.
You got it?
Okay. Okay. Set it down. All right, sonny boy. You can beat it.
Yes, sir.
And listen, bud.
Yes, sir?
If I was you, I'd forget I ever seen this carpet. Understand?
Yes, sir. What carpet?
My next car, please.
Well, where you been, big shot?
I had to take a tenant down to the basement.
The basement?
Yeah. Somebody from the penthouse wanted to see the super about something.
Oh, I see. I thought you was going to stick around and help the cops catch Maddox when he shows up.
Okay, Alex, you think I'm kidding, but I do know him. What he looks like.
Yeah, with his mug all over the paper, sure. You and a million other people.
I mean what he looks like. Since I remember, he's a medium-sized small guy, about my size.
Oh, a shrimp.
All right, but you wait. If that guy comes into this building, I'll spot him and I'll...
All right, everybody, all right. Just stand right where you are, please.
That's the lieutenant. It must be Maddox.
Maddox?
Now, there's no danger, folks. No danger. We're just trying to locate somebody.
Say, I gotta go.
You stay here.
I just remember the party up on the 15th floor.
You stay...
But see, I figured the cops had everything under control about this Maddox, and there was no use of my button in until they need me. And so I'm sort of getting my breath and going past the ninth floor before I notice the little guy in the car with me. A nice-looking little guy, and he speaks to me real friendly.
What's all the excitement down there?
Oh, well, they think some gangster named Maddox is loose in the building somewhere.
Do they?
Yeah.
Maybe it was a good idea we started up and we did, huh?
Oh, I don't know. Don't worry me none. What floor?
The penthouse, please.
Oh, you're looking for Mr. Ellinger.
That's right.
My girl's up there with him right now.
Your girl?
Yeah, she's a manicurist. Mr. Ellinger sent for her a little while ago for a manicure.
Oh.
Well, here's your floor.
Say, wait a minute before you open those doors. I got a little proposition to make to you.
Proposition?
Yeah, you see, Mr. Ellinger's an old pal of mine. He's a great guy for gags. I haven't seen him for quite a while. I want to pull one on him, see?
Oh, well, yeah, but...
I want to borrow your uniform. If we just swap coats, that's enough. It'll only take a minute, the whole thing.
Oh, I'm sorry. I couldn't do anything like that. The regulations...
Sure, I know. Would this help?
Oh, no, I couldn't. You see, if... $100?
Sure, with me and Ellinger, it's anything for a gag, and, like I say, it'll only take a minute.
Well, I don't know, but $100?
Oh, here, go on, take it. Now, give me your coat. Here's mine.
Well, you sure it'll only take a minute?
That's right.
Okay, here you are.
Okay, now let's go. You better come with me, though, so you can get your coat back and go right on down, see?
Yeah, sure. I'll prop the car doors open.
I'm sorry.
Millie!
Eddie Albright, for heaven's sakes, now what?
Who is she?
Oh, that's my, that's Millie that I told you about.
Where's Ellinger?
Well, I'm sure I don't know, and I've been waiting quite a while, and if I have to wait much longer...
You sure he's not home?
Well, I should be. And if I have to wait much longer, I'm simply going to have to charge him the full rate anyway. And if you're a friend of his, I wish you'd
tell
him.
Yeah, sure. I'll fix it for you. We'll come in and wait.
As for you, Mr. Albright, of course it's no business of mine. But if you want to throw away your job and your whole career...
I got my reasons,
come on.
Millie.
Well...
Yeah, but you said it would only take a minute.
Come on. There's another $100 in it for you when you get your coat back.
$100?
See? I told you.
Your boyfriend and I are just pulling a little gag, miss.
Boyfriend? Are you implicating that this... Well, I must say, someone has given you the wrong kind of an impression entirely.
Yeah, okay, but you two could do quite a lot with a couple of $100, couldn't you? Suppose, you wait here in the front room, miss. We'll go on inside. But don't tell Mr. Ellinger we're here. We want to surprise him.
Yes, sir, of course. I've $200.
Listen, I can't wait long, you know.
Yes, sure, I know. In here. Let's go out on the balcony. Ah, it's nice up here.
Yeah, I always wanted a penthouse.
You know, with them looking all over for this Maddox, or whatever his name is, they won't miss you for a while.
Yeah, there's that. But boy, I just wish I could lay my hands on that guy.
Oh, Maddox?
Yeah, boy, if I could just capture him single-handed or something.
What's the matter? You got something against the guy?
Oh, no, no, Mr.
Mason.
No, Mr. Mason, I got nothing against him. But I gotta do something pretty quick.
Fooling around with guys like this Maddox could be a little unhealthy, though, couldn't it?
Yeah, there's that. But, well, you see, Mr. Mason, I gotta do something for Millie.
Oh. I don't know, she seems like a nice kid. She doesn't seem like the kind who'd expect any crazy grandstand plays from a guy.
Oh, she wouldn't, Mr. Mason. Millie's the top. She's aces. But you see, well, I already made one and it flopped. It was a terrible flop.
Oh, showing off for a dame, huh? Like a little kid.
Yeah, I guess so, Mr. Mason. I guess I made an awful fool out of myself. But, well, now I gotta do something to make up for it.
Listen, Eddie, a dame that's any good, she doesn't expect anything special of a guy. If she does lay off because she's poisoned, take my word for it, I know. Maybe I wouldn't be where I am today if I hadn't tried to show off for a dame. Just like you. I was a punk kid. I didn't know any better.
Gee, Mr. Mason, I wouldn't say where you are today is so bad. Being able to pass out $100 bills like you do.
Yeah. Well, you get older. You see things a little different sometimes. How'd you come to louse it up with her?
Well, you see, it began by me telling about this job that I got as assistant to Mr. Garvey, the building manager. Only I don't have it yet. And then Alex. He's the starter. He tips her off. And then I'm trying to explain to her when I bring her up here. Only I don't get a chance because these two mugs get in my car with a
what
big
What two cover. Mugs?
The two to come from the penthouse here. I guess they're working for Mr. Ellinger, and they got a big rolled-up carpet, and they want to go down to the basement, and I told them the regulations, but, gee, maybe I shouldn't be saying this after what they told me.
What did they tell you?
Well, about the carpet, they said.
Carpet. So that's it.
Well, I guess it's okay to tell you, Mr. Mason, but I was scared. Well, there was a body in that carpet. Gosh, you don't suppose that's why Mr. Ellinger...
Now listen, Eddie, you stay right here, see?
But Mr. Mason, my coat...
You... I'll be back in 2 minutes, kid, then you'll be all set. The basement, huh?
Yeah, but Mr. Wait, Mr. Mason...
You stay here if you want your coat back.
Oh.
Well, Mr. Albright, I see your newfound friend has left you holding the bag.
Oh, Millie, I don't know. Everything has gone wrong today.
Well, you can't say that your friends, or those who were your friends, didn't give you fair warning.
You mean you're still my friend?
I didn't say that. I just hope that Mr. Alex Henderson is your friend when you try to explain to him what happened to your uniform coat.
Alex Henderson. Listen, Millie, you don't see anything in that guy, do you? Well, he's just a common
starter.
I think
Mr. Henderson is a very high-type gentleman and not a big phony.
Him? Well, he's the worst.
And at least he is not ashamed of his position.
He is, too.
And seeing that he is your superior,
yeah,
I
well,
feel...
he won't be for long. I can tell you that right now.
All right, Maddox, reach.
What?
Don't try to spell him, Max. Get him up.
They got guns!
Maddox, hey, listen, I'm not Maddox.
What do you
I'm...
think you're kidding? We know you've been having a doctor change your face the last 6 months.
And then you think you're going to walk right in here and knock off Ellinger for that 50 grand he took you for. But you're a little late. You know why?
Listen, fellas, you got it wrong. Don't you remember?
I'll tell you why. Because...
And we got tipped off and we got Ellinger out of here in a carpet. How do you like that?
You know who is going to get it? You, Maddox.
Oh, no.
Hey, look, my girl, she fainted.
And she's in luck. You got any last words, Maddox?
Oh, wait, listen. I'm not Maddox. I'm the elevator boy.
I never thought I'd see you crawl, Maddox.
Look, don't you remember? I took you down with the carpet to the basement.
Go on, go ahead. I'm getting a big boot out of this.
Hey, wait a minute. Maybe he's got something. Come over here, you.
Yes, sir.
Well, I think it is the elevator punk.
That's me, sir. That's right. The elevator punk. That's me.
Get up. What do you think?
I don't know. What happened to your uniform, punk?
Well, there was a man. He was in my car.
All right, turn around and get it.
Maddox!
What happened those next few minutes, I'll never know. I was down on the floor until the shooting stopped, and then it was awful still, and I opened one eye and looked around, and Mr. Mason, only he was Maddox, I recognized him. And the two mugs were lying on the floor, and they weren't moving either. And then I saw Millie lying there, too, and I rushed over to her. And I took her in my arms, and then she opened her eyes, so I knew she was all right. So I rushed back to Mr. Maddox to see if I can help him. On account of he was nice to me, whatever he was. But he was dead all right, I guess. And I took the gun out of his hand, and then all of a sudden the room was full of people, cops and Alex Henderson, and even Mr. Garvey. They were all crowding around me, and everybody was saying something different.
It's Maddox all right, Chief. He's got identification.
What happened here?
Is that the missing operator, Henderson?
That's right, Mr. Garvey.
Who's the girl?
My officer. He's got a gun in his hand.
Give me that, son.
Yes, sir.
Well. Say, son, you must have been mixed up in this little party yourself, huh? Where'd you get the gun?
Well, Lieutenant...
It's Maddox's gun, isn't it?
That's right, Chief. That's what must have happened. Maddox gunned the two hoods, and then the kid jumped him.
Yeah? Well, that took a lot of courage, son. Is that what happened?
Well, sir,
Go ahead, Eddie. Speak up. Don't be afraid.
Oh, no, Mr. Garvey. I'm not afraid. I'm
just
perfectly...
tell us what happened, son.
Well, what happened? Yes, sir. That's what happened, all right. What you said... Mr. Maddox made me come in here and change clothes with him. And then those two came in, and Maddox shot them, and then, well, I just sort of overpowered him, and the gun went off, and he was killed.
I know guys on the force wouldn't have dared do that.
Eddie!
Did she see it?
I fainted.
Well, say, young man, you certainly are to be congratulated.
Thanks, Mr. Garvey.
Yes, sir, you're the type of man we need on the Dunbar building staff, which reminds me. There's a position as my personal assistant coming open. I think you could fill it. Come and talk to me about it in the morning.
Oh, yes, sir, Mr. Garvey.
Oh, Eddie.
Hey, Chief.
Yeah?
Look, Maddox. He's alive.
So he is.
Yeah.
He can talk.
He can talk?
How about it, Maddox? Is that what happened?
What happened?
The kid here says you gunned the other two and he overpowered you. And you got it in the struggle for the gun. Is that what happened?
The kid there... overpowered me?
Oh.
Yeah, sure. The kid just overpowered me.
He's gone.
Gosh. The reason I told this, well, Millie and I got married when I got the job at Mr. Garvey, and well... something pretty important is going to happen pretty soon. And, well, I got to think of what Mr. Maddox said. And I told Millie the whole thing. Because I didn't want to have a kid who could ever say his old man was a big phony.
Hello, Eddie. Good morning, Mr. Albright.
Alex?
Car 3, sir? Take Mr. Albright right up.
Oh, thank you, Alex. I've been watching your work. You're doing grand. Grand. Now, just look alive. Well, shall we go? Up, up, quickly, boy. Up.
Suspense. Presented by Roma Wines. R-O-M-A, Roma. America's favorite wines. This is Truman Bradley bringing back to our microphone the star of tonight's suspense play, Phil Silvers. Well, Phil, as a screen comedian, your usual job is to keep people in stitches rather than in suspense. Tell me, how did you like the change tonight?
Truman, believe me, it's a lot easier to make people scared than it is to make them smile.
Well, would a top-flight comedian like yourself object to a tip on how to make folks smile?
Hey, the last time I got a good tip was when a guy mistook me for a waiter. But go on ahead. Old Silvers needs a little polish. My judge, that's a good one. Polish, did you get it?
Well, Phil, if you want to see smiles of satisfaction on the faces of your friends, just serve them Roma wine. To help you, here's a hamper of Roma wines with the compliments of Roma, the greatest name in wine.
Say, I'll take that tip and the Roma wine with thanks, Truman.
Among the fine Roma wines in your hamper, Phil, you'll find a bottle of Roma California Burgundy. Roma Burgundy is good any time and a special favorite at Easter. Millions prefer Roma Burgundy as the perfect flavor mate with a traditional Easter ham, turkey, or roast. Yes, red, robust Roma Burgundy, with its full, fragrant bouquet and tempting taste, brings out all the rich, natural flavor of red meats, adds friendliness, good taste, and distinction to any meal.
Roma Burgundy it is, Truman.
And Phil, in all Roma wines, you enjoy an important difference, an extra goodness in fuller bouquet, richer body, and better taste. Yes, Roma wines taste better, because Roma selects the better-tasting wines from the world's greatest reserves. That's why more Americans enjoy Roma
than any other wine.
Well, that's good enough for me, Truman. And may I add a credit? Phil Silvers is currently being seen in his living room. Thank you. You've been devoted.
Tonight's suspense play was written by Roy Grandy and Robert Richards. Next Thursday, same time, you will hear Mr. Kirk Douglas as star of Suspense.
Produced and directed by William Spear for the Roma Wine Company of Fresno, California.
In the coming weeks, Suspense will present such stars as Ava Gardner, David Niven, Lloyd Nolan, Lynn Barry, and others. Make it a point to listen each Thursday to Suspense, radio's outstanding theater of thrills. Stay tuned for the thrilling adventures of the FBI in Peace and War, which follows immediately over most of these stations. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Countdown for blast-off. X-minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X-minus 1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents
X minus one.
Tonight, an original story by Ernest Canoy. The time, early in the 21st century. The story, Martian Sam.
The whole thing started the first day of spring training. I'd gotten into camp 2 or 3 days before and started to loosen up a little. Because at my age, even batting fungos to an outfielder can tie your muscles up into knots. Although, as a matter of fact, I'd bet that I was in better condition than half the Humpty Dumpties on the club. We hadn't won a pennant since, 1997 or was it 98? And it looked like we had a permanent lease on 12th place. The Los Angeles Dodgers were in pretty sad shape, and that's the honest truth. I was standing behind the batting cage watching a couple of kids from our Tokyo farm team when Tommy Watson from the New York Times Tribune News caught me by the elbow.
Hi, Joe. Well, how's it look this spring?
Well, Tommy, the club has been considerably improved.
Mm-hmm.
Several of the youngsters are ready to deliver this year, and, of course, we expect sterling performances from our veterans. Is that what you want?
Oh, come on now, Joe, come off it. Has old man Castle loosened up enough to buy a catcher?
Not that I know of.
Well, how about a left-handed pitcher?
Well, they're those two boys from Tokyo.
Oh, come on, they couldn't throw a cream puff across the dining room table. Well, how does it feel to be first base coach for a team that'll clinch last place by July 4th?
You're very kind, Tommy. Very kind.
I just hate to see that old tightwad Castle run this club into the ground. I remember my father used to tell me about the times way back, when they were still in Brooklyn. And I can remember going down to Robinson Stadium when I was a kid to watch doubleheaders with the Denver Giants. Now look at them. A bunch of overage bums and a few kids who could hardly make the high school team. And all Castle's money goes to buy sports rockets for that screwball son of his. Oh, Joe, baseball isn't what it used to be.
Miss sad truth of the matter was that Tommy was putting it mild. Old man Castle, the owner, begrudged every nickel that was spent on the ball club. I don't think anybody'd gotten a raise in the last 5 years. The manager was old Rabbit Cinadella, and Castle used to issue statements every year about how he had great faith in him. Truth of the matter was that Rabbit would work for less than any other manager this side of the Sally League. You'll see what I mean when I tell you that the club traveled in an old four-jet strato rocket like some barnstorming semi-pro team. I was in the locker room looking down at my feet to avoid looking around that were passed for ball players on this Los Angeles Dodgers when Rabbit came up to me.
Joe.
Yeah?
Get your pants on and come into the office.
Oh, what's the matter?
Never mind. Come on.
Okay. Listen, Rabbit. What are we going to do about a left-handed pitcher?
Later, later. Joe, I had an idea. I thought we could take one of the right-handers and sew the letter backwards across his shirt, and maybe that'd fool the other club.
Yeah.
Come on inside.
Or maybe we ought to disguise Iron Mike, the batting practice robot.
All right, that's enough. Joe, the old man's dead.
What?
I said he's dead. Old man Castle. Heart attack. I figured we had him scared till we'd loosen up a little dough for players, and then he goes and does this to us. Can't trust nobody.
Well, who gets the club?
His son.
What, you mean Whistling Willie Castle, the Jetstream playboy?
That's who.
But he doesn't know anything about a ball club.
He doesn't have to. Old man Castle owns 72% of the stock. And it all goes to Willie.
Well, what's going to happen?
Beats me. Probably sell us all out and buy a new rocket.
Is he here?
It was in the Earth Moon small boat race when it happened. They got a message to him when he hit the direct beam off Lunaport. He could have landed and taken the shuttle back and made it in one day. But he was leading in the race, so he just kept going. He's due in a couple hours.
You think you can get him to go for a left-handed pitcher?
I don't know. We'll have to try.
Of course, you've heard of Willie Castle. About once a year, he cracks up some expensive sports rocket or gets himself picked up in a survival suit by the IP, floating somewhere in an orbit around the moon. He almost got put away a couple of years ago when he took a debutante up in a Harrison Kilgore cruiser and kept her in orbit for 2 months. The old man was able to kill the abduction charges by claiming that they'd been married at the time. And one time when the old man had a couple of us up at the lodge he lives in during spring training, I saw the kid's room. It was filled with Marak heads that he'd shot on safaris on Mars. He came down to the training camp a week later. He buzzed over in a Harley Donaldson atmospheric and set the ship down in the hole between second and third, burning out half the infield. I saw a Rabbit get him to one side and start talking fast, so I sneaked over and listened.
Well, Mr. Castle, of course you know we're all very sorry about your father's death. And
he had it coming, the old tightwad.
Oh, well, I see.
I couldn't convince him that a credit isn't any good to you, stuffed in a mattress. You got to spend, isn't that right?
Yeah, it is. As a matter of fact, that's what I wanted to see you about. Now, there's a boy in one of the Milwaukee farm clubs, a left-handed pitcher. I can get him for about $30,000 and a couple of players. And
what do you mean?
Well, I mean, you're absolutely right, Mr. Castle. You got to spend money. And if we could get a little help in pitching and maybe an outfielder or two...
You mean spend money for baseball players?
Well, yeah. That was what I had in mind.
Now, wait a minute. This baseball team was my father's hobby, like some old men collect stamps or play checkers. Now, in the terms of the will, I can't sell it. But I'm sure not going to throw any good money away on something foolish like baseball players.
Oh, I see.
As a matter of fact, I'm going to need all the cash I can lay my hands on.
Yeah?
Yeah. I've got a chance to buy a 3-pile nuclear eraser that'll cut 2 weeks off the round trip to Mars.
Oh, I see. You wouldn't want to spend money on anything as foolish as ball players.
That's it. You've got the idea now. Oh, by the way, Mr. Cinadella.
Yeah?
I find it's quite embarrassing to me to have my friends continually make fun of me because the Dodgers are in last place.
Well, as a matter of fact, that gets to be a touchy point with me, too.
Well, I'd like to see it change, so if you don't mind, would you please have them somewhere in a more respectable position, say third or second, within a month or two?
Now, look here, Mr. Castle, I can't make bricks without straw. You won't spend the credit for a ball player, and I can't...
You do your best.
Well, after that interview with the new owner, Rabbit went out and tied one on, and I had to run the ball club for 2 days till we got him straightened out. But I can't say as I blamed him. We won one game in the Grapefruit League. We played the Jacksonville High School team and squeaked out a 13-12 victory. Now, what the Yankees and Braves did to us, I'd rather not say. We opened the season at home, and a mediocre pitcher for Pittsburgh threw a no-hitter at us. Actually, that's not quite accurate. The truth is, he just pitched, and we didn't hit anything. We lost 10 straight from opening day, and we didn't lose on the 11th day because it rained. Rabbit and me piled into his 97 copter and flew out to the Castle Estate up near Arrowhead. I was in pretty bad shape. For one thing, Rabbit's copter has a wobble, and I was feeling green around the gills by the time we dropped down on the port. Willie Castle was very excited by the time we finally got to see him. He was puttering around a whole mess of stuff piled up in the middle of the floor.
Say, how do you like this? Isn't it exciting?
Yeah. What is it?
It's a Durgo stake.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And they use it in Mars in a game played between two villages. You see, all the men on one side line up, and then all the men on the other side try to knock them over with these sticks. Isn't it a beauty?
Yeah. Look, Mr. Castle, I got to speak to you. We got to have a left-handed pitcher.
Oh, you mean for the baseball team?
Yeah, that's right, the baseball team. That's what we got to have a left-handed pitcher for. Yeah.
Well, now, I can't really be bothered with details of that sort. I'm leaving for Mars in the morning. Oh, by the way, I haven't had a chance to look at the standings recently. How are we doing?
Mr. Castle, we may well set a modern record for consecutive games lost. Now, look here. You told me you can't sell the club. And you said you get tired of your friends kidding you about being last. Well, take it from me, Mr. Castle, and I know. Unless we get some ball players on that club, it's going to be last for the next 22 years.
Now, look here, Cinderella.
I know you can fire me, but I don't care who you hire as manager. Unless you get him a left-handed pitcher and a couple of other players, that club is going to stay last.
Oh. Oh, well, then I'll see what I can do. Don't worry about it.
What do you mean, don't worry about it? I got to go out there every day and try to make those bums go through the motions.
Now, look, I really have to pack. And besides, I'm expecting a new shipment of equipment from Aberfitch and Combi. Now, just don't worry about it. I'll think of something. Goodbye.
Next day, we lost a doubleheader to Cincinnati by a score faintly reminiscent of basketball. And that's the way it went. Oh, we won a couple here and there. Like they say, you know, you can't lose them all. About the middle of the season, we were so far behind that the local papers just dropped us off the standings, didn't even bother to report it. It was about this time that Willie Castle returned from Mars. He came out to see us at the ballpark just before the massacre.
Well, I notice, Mr. Cinadilla, that we're still in last place.
Yeah, Mr. Castle, we are. We are lucky we are still in the league. With the ball players that you've given me.
Well, I just wanted to tell you that I made a small bet with one of the boys at the country club.
Yeah?
Yes. I bet $1,000,000 that we'd win the pennant this year.
That's nice.
You don't seem to understand. I expect to win that bet.
Yeah, sure. And I expect to put on a Monroe suit and win the Miss Universe title.
I told you to leave everything to me. Now, I'd like you to come into my office, if you please. I have a few things I'd like to talk over with you. For one thing, I've signed a ball player.
You what? Oh, look here, Mr. Castle. This I got to complain about. My contract is clear. No ball player gets signed without my okay.
Just come into my office, please. I'll explain everything.
That night, when Rabbit went up to the plate to hand in the starting lineups, I could tell something was happening. For one thing, old Baldy Snuff, the umpire, was looking at the card like it was written in Arabic.
All right, who's the pitcher?
It's written right there in the card.
Saramo Castro Perbaco.
What's the matter, can't you read?
Oh, come on now, you kidding? Is he Armenian?
Nope. Martian.
Martian?
That's right. Martian.
Of course, the riot didn't really start until our pitcher got out on the mound. Fred Kurtz, the Milwaukee manager, came running out like he'd been shot from a jet. Baldy Snuff was hollering. The whole Milwaukee bench was looking for a fight, but Rabbit just stood there quiet and calm.
He can't do that. He can't do that. Look at that thing. What is that?
That's my pitcher. We call him Sam.
But you can't play with that. That ain't a ball player. That isn't even a human being.
What are you trying to pull, Rabbit?
Listen, I got my rights. I sign them legal. Here's the contract.
But now look here, Rabbit. You can't get away with that. That thing's only about 2 feet high.
18 inches, as a matter of fact.
But how's he gonna pitch? He hasn't even got any arms.
Sure he has. He's got it curled up. Hey, Sam, wind up.
But that arm, it's just...
It's 32 feet long.
That ain't legal. You gonna let him get away with that?
Oh, there's one other thing. On the end of that arm, look, you see? That's his eye.
Rabbit, I'm going to punch you right in the nose.
Now, take it easy, Kurtz. Take it easy.
Look, I got the papers all here. I've got the United Nations Concordat with the Marshall Colonial Government, a Supreme Court decision in the case of Schultz versus Karawar, Kalpabal, Kalfitz, et al. It's legal. Any Martian citizen is entitled to the same legal rights and privileges as a citizen of Earth. And among those is the right to play ball in a national league.
I protest again. I forfeit the game. I... Rabbit, I'm going to punch you right in the nose.
As a matter of fact, the game that night was postponed because of riot. The next morning, everybody met in the commissioner's office, and sure enough, it was legal. Martian Sam, we come to call him, was a legally signed player for the Los Angeles Dodgers.
I told you not to worry. I found Sam in a village just north of Marsport. He's a Klugel hunter.
A what?
A Klugel hunter. Klugels are fast little animals that run about 80 miles an hour, and the hunters go out and throw rocks at them and kill them. Sam's a Klugel hunter. He ought to be a pretty good pitcher.
How about the other clubs? What happens if they get Klugel hunters?
Oh, they won't. You see, it's basically contrary to Martian psychology. They won't ever leave their own villages.
Then how come Sam left?
Well, it was an unfortunate accident, really. You see, when I first met him, I gave him a stick of chewing gum.
Yeah?
Well, he got hooked.
What do you mean, hooked?
Well, for Martians, the chicle seems to be habit-forming. Sam is a gum addict. Well, naturally, as soon as this was discovered, the traffic was prohibited. There's a death penalty for importing of chewing gum to Mars. But it was too late for Sam, so he came out with me.
You mean all we gotta do is keep him supplied with chewing gum?
That's right. I told you I'd take care of it, didn't I? Now you've got your left-handed pitcher.
Sam pitched that night. He struck out 27 batters, and we won 3-0. Horse Kelly, the catcher, had a little trouble at first, but he soon figured out how to get around it. He'd just hold his mitt up and close his eyes, and when he heard a thunk, he'd reach in and pull the ball out and throw it back to Sam. You can imagine what it was like being a batter up there against Sam. Pitcher's mound is only 60 feet away from the plate as it is, and with Sam's 32-foot arm, well, we didn't lose the game the rest of the season. Of course, we started out so far behind that by the last game of the season, we were tied with the Milwaukees, and we were playing them at Milwaukee. The winner of this game won the pennant. Of course, it was a lead pipe cinch for us. Martian Sam had pitched every day since he joined the club. He looked real cute out on a mound, standing 18 inches high in his little Dodgers uniform and in that long 32-foot arm. We had taken a finished batting practice at Milwaukee County Stadium, and I was standing next to Willie Castle's box talking to him.
Well, it looks like I won't have to be embarrassed about owning the Los Angeles Dodgers anymore, eh?
That's right. With Sam pitching, that means we win the pennant and the series.
Well, I think that's very nice. As a matter of fact, I'm thinking of taking the whole team on a barnstorming tour through Mars after the series is over.
Hey, Joe! Joe! Oh, Mr. Castle.
Well, what's the matter?
It's Sam. Sam!
Well, what's the matter? Is anything wrong with him? Did he get his chewing gum?
Yeah, he got his chewing gum, but he's just lying on the floor in the locker room moaning.
He is. We better get a doctor.
Yeah, and all those scales keep falling off him.
Oh, no.
What's the matter?
I know what it is.
What?
It's the molting season. All the scales will fall off. It'll take him a week to grow new scales.
But he can pitch, can't he?
No, he can't. Any violent movement would bring on great pain.
Well, there goes the ball game. Martian Sam can't pitch. We're dead.
Rabbit put it mild. We were good and dead. We pitched Harry Kuznowski, our best human pitcher, but our best human pitcher was none too good. He rose to the occasion, however, and the score was tied going into the last half of the ninth.
That's the way, Harry, old boy! That's the way, party! Come on, Harry! You can do it, baby!
Unfortunately, he couldn't. He hit a streak of wildness and walked three straight men. Things were very quiet in the Dodgers' dugout. One more walk would force in a run, the ball game would be over. Then as we all sat there staring out at the mound where Harry was sweating, we heard a little shuffling noise.
Oh, what's that? Sam, what are you doing out here?
And then with the little squeaks that he used for talking, Sam told us what he wanted to do. He wanted a pitch.
But, Sam, you can't. You're molting. You're scales. All right, Sam, all right. If that's the way you want it, you get out there. You pitch that one batter. It's two out. You strike him out, it'll go to extra innings, and we'll win the ball game.
And so Marsh and Sam trudged out to the pitcher's mound, his tiny legs lagging with great pain. You could just tell the little guy was hurting bad.
Now pitching for Los Angeles, Marsh and Sam.
We knew that Sam could do it now. We only had to face one batter and we'd get our chance again. Horse threw the ball out to him and Sam stood there, his eye on the end of his 32-foot arm, blinking with pain.
All right, batter up. Let's get a batter in there.
The umpire called for the batter and nobody came out of the Milwaukee dugout.
Hey, come on, let's go. Hey, Kurtz, get a man up in there.
What's the matter, Baldy?
Let's get a batter in there. You're delaying the game.
What do you mean I'm delaying the game?
You get a batter up there.
But I got a batter up there.
What do you mean? There's nobody in the batter's box.
Baldy, I got a contract here for you to read.
What are you talking about?
Yeah. Read it.
Well, of course, everybody knows what happened. The Milwaukee Braves had signed an intelligent virus from the moons of Jupiter. He was up there in the batter's box, but of course you couldn't see him without an electron microscope. He walked on four straight pitches, forcing in a run, and the Milwaukee's won the pennant. But like I say, that's baseball. You can't win them all.
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, which this month features Time in the Round by Fritz Leiber, the story of a dictator who suffered more than any dictator in history. He was so puny, and his victims were so impregnable. Galaxy Magazine, on your newsstand today. Tonight, X-1 has brought you Martian Sam, an original story written for radio by Ernest Canoy. Featured in the cast were Mandel Kramer as Joe, Santos Ortega as Rabbit, Ivor Francis as Willie, Jack Orison as Baldy, Bob Hastings as Tommy, and Bill Zuckert as Kurtz. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter and is an NBC Radio Network production.